Hi, and welcome to the Heritage Radio Network. Today on the show, we have a very, very special guest. HRN is really excited to have Joe Bastianich here in studio with us, live and in person, food and wine maverick. And Joe, I know there must be a ton of young, wide-eyed, aspiring restaurateurs who'd like to know how you took your vision for new American foodways from their nascent stages to where they are now. Tell us briefly about what inspired you to become a food movement maverick.
Wow, maverick's a pretty heavy word. I think I kind of grew up in a food and wine family, and it was always a pretty natural course of events, you know, just coming and living in an Italian family and learning about food from my grandmother and my mother and people who made wine and made food for their living and people, you know, immigrant family who came to this country, and this is how we made a living. So even though these days perhaps the movement's a little bit glam and of trend, you know, where we come from is it's a way that we've sustained our family and our livelihood, and serving food and wine to people and creating hospitality is a way to make a living. That said, there's a lot of bells and whistles that come with that, and I think that coming from the sensibility and the culture of an Italian table, the way my grandmother and my mother taught me, has always been a very big influence in my life, and I feel fortunate that in my world, working within the vernacular of Italian food and wine, it's such a strong, undeniable, appealing message to everyone that you're doing something that people want to love, so it's easy to do it right.
Sure. Well, I grew up in an Italian family. My father's from Siena in Tuscany, so I know what it's like to live in a food-centric family unit. What's the biggest piece of advice you have for an aspiring restaurateur?
What do you think about the Florentines, like being a Sienese? Does that battle still rage in your family? Like, do you still feel trodden upon by the Florentine nobility as a as a second generation American Sienese, or is that water under the bridge at this point for you?
Well, I don't think my father does either. My father is actually first generation Sienese. The antagonisms that he has exist actually more within Siena itself, within the divisions that separate the city, and within the different neighborhoods that are represented by horses in the Palio.
Of course.
And so I don't think he holds any animosity towards Florence. In fact, he also partially grew up in Florence as well.
Oh, okay. So you're like mixed breed. Because they say meglio uno morto in casa che un Fiorentino alla porta, no?
So, which is better someone dead in the house than a Florentine at the door.
Right. And I was thinking, you guys should do like a mini Palio, a Palio di Williamsburg or something like that. You could do like a mini Palio.
Palio di Bushwick.
Yeah, Palio di Bushwick. Why not? Like do a little like food and wine theme. You guys are half the way there, right?
Sure. We could definitely have some horses running around with the Ferraris in the
You have a Ferrari already?
Yeah.
So you're halfway there. All right. So back to answering questions.
What's the biggest piece of advice you have for an aspiring restaurateur?
That and the more cynical response that art without commerce is a hobby. So that make sure that everything you do has some sort of profitability or margin equated with it, because you can love it as much as you want and be as passionate as you want about it, but unless you can make a living or other people around you can make some sort of a living doing it, it will not last.
Mm-hmm.
So always figure in margin or profit into whatever passion that you have. And
right.
then it will sustain it, grow it. It will become more significant because it's generative.
Right.
And I think that's where a lot of people lose their way.
They think that there's some sort of antagonism between profiteering
and
there's passion.
They're absolutely, and that's the essence of Italianness, right? Because the Italians have always been creative, spontaneous, incredible people who pursue their passions but have always also made money doing it, and amalgamating and melding the concepts of commerce and art is the true essence of the Italian spirit.
Very well said. What's the X factor in a successful restaurant? Like sometimes two restaurants will open next to one another and one will enjoy incredible success and the other will flounder. What do you think, in your experience, what has made your restaurant so successful? What's been that missing ingredient?
You know, I think that there's a purity in the vision. Again, I think working within the Italian vernacular is something we've always been lucky enough to be able to do. So we, you know, our job is not to invent anything new. We're not inventing local Hudson Valley cuisine or American cuisine. We're simply taking what's true and rich to Italy and interpreting it for an American market and American consumers without leaving behind the essence of the Italianness or the culture of the Italian table. So we're interpreters, I think, really more than anything else. We take what's authentic and real, interpret it for a New York lifestyle, New York people, New York palates, New York price point, and doing and having that transition or interpretation done in a way that still allows the purity of the experience to speak through and allows people to enjoy it at a price point that's acceptable to them. You know, that's where art meets commerce. And it, again, it gets back to that point. It's like you're doing something you love, you're doing something that you feel passionate about, that's real, but people are willing to pay for it, and you can make money doing it, and then it grows and it sustains itself, and one restaurant leads to another and down the line.
So what do you think, speaking of secret missing ingredients, what do you think sets Roberto's apart from the average New York restaurant? I mean, you've obviously taken an interest in this place. You obviously see some sort of special spark in it.
The spark for me was Anastasia, who I work with every day, and she's, you know, a lover of Roberto's and a participant in what you guys do here, and she's spiritually akin to that, and I'm spiritually akin to her, so when she starts talking about this place, it obviously meant something to me. And then she explained what was going on here, and I think it's the essence of, again, I hate to harp on the same point, but there's like, you know, it's kind of like an Italian village, you know, it's about local, it's about community.
Very trattoria feel here.
But it goes beyond that. It's not just, you guys aren't just serving food here. You're serving a little bit of soul satisfaction. You're serving a little bit of community and serving a little bit of a warm hug or a love that people maybe don't.
Do-it-yourself spirit.
Yeah, people don't get on a day-to-day basis. It ain't just dinner, Roberto's, I tell you that. And I can, and I sensed that the moment I walked in here. But, you know, you guys are giving back to the community. You're creating something that's real, that's sustainable, that you're creating what people need in the community. That, yeah, it's dinner or lunch, but it's a lot more than that.
And just to clarify, Joe is giving me credit for something that I don't do. I'm just a producer on HRN, but I know that Brandon Hoy...
So you guys generally, you being one of the guys that are here, so you take credit if you want.
Brandon Hoy and Chris Parrachini are the ones that deserve all the credit, and I know that Anastasia has had a very big hand in creating this rooftop garden and creating a lot of sustainable urban gardens around the country, around the city. I overheard you talking to Chris, the co-owner here, about the new winery that you're
getting. Yeah, we were just lucky enough to partner with some Italian friends from Alba and a new property called Brandini in La Mora. And being lucky enough to participate in winemaking in Italy, in Friuli, my homeland, Trieste and Udine, and then in Tuscany more recently, to go to Piedmont, which is kind of like the motherlode, the mothership of wine, and to be able to make Barolo is kind of the be-all, end-all. It's the Formula One of winemaking. I've kind of have the muse that will take me to the last days of my life as a winemaker. And
the apotheosis of the craft.
It's the mecca. So it's a small estate. It's 9 hectares. It's certified biological, which is another incredible thing to be able to do that within the European qualification.
What does that mean exactly?
Certified biological as a category means absolutely no chemical or petroleum-based intervention in farming or winemaking at all. So it's completely sustainable, completely natural. It's not biodynamic. And the problem with this terminology is, as you guys probably know, that it means different things in different places, especially in America. We struggle with organic. It's such an abused, used, bad, basically watered a down. Bad, watered-down term that's become industrial scapegoat term that, you know, everyone can make anything organic. In Europe, biological, certified biological, and biodynamic mean very specific things. And I think that one of the challenges we have to get to, the agricultural in general, and agricultural as it applies to grape growing and winemaking, is what do these terms mean, and give them some meaning in this country. And I think that's something that we're kind of getting through, and people are trying to figure it out. We haven't gotten there yet. But in Europe, the terms are more clearly defined, and I think they mean a little bit more at this point.
So now let me shift a little bit to another passion of yours. I heard through the grapevine, pun very intended, that you have a musical background and that you have a passion for music and you're involved in a band.
No, well, I mean, when I'm done with restaurants, I plan to make my living as a singer-songwriter. I'm going to move to Nashville and try to hack it out as a singer-songwriter because the restaurant thing has been great, but I'd need to find the next thing to do. So that'll be the future.
Small studio apartment, singer-songwriter.
Maybe I'll live in an Airstream, you know, whatever it takes. Maybe I'll have to live in my car again, whatever it takes. No, but music is something I'm passionate about. I'm a big fan. I'm a very amateur musician. I enjoy it. I love to be a part of it wherever I can, and I'm more of a fan than anything else.
And you had like a Led Zeppelin themed wine tasting recently?
We're trying to in a very, very real way put together my two greatest passions, which are music and wine, mm-hmm. and kind of figure out how they exist in the same room. It's been 20 years in the making, as I've lived my life as a music lover and a wine
aficionado.
Well, wine, whatever, you know, a person who makes his living talking, selling, making wine, and the ability to try and figure out how to merge those two interests and present them to a public in a way simultaneously has been amalgamated into this concept of crushed food and crushed wine and music pairing. And we've done the first one with Led Zeppelin. I'm working on more, so more to come on that.
Well, I can say on behalf of the Heritage Radio Network, on behalf of Patrick Martins and Roberto's, that it's been a real honor to have you here. I can say that genuinely.
You guys are great, and what you're doing here is great. And Patrick is an old good friend, so it's nice.
Well, I know he's in his living room jumping up and down.
Where is he right now, anyway? Why isn't he here?
He's probably on the Upper East Side in his apartment, making sure that all the meat that he's delivered this week has gotten there safely.
Either that or, yeah. Okay, good.
But I know he's really excited to have you on.
Well, we send out our best to Patrick.
It was a real honor. We hope to have you on again, Jeff.
Thanks.